Good morning. Welcome back to From the Stand. I'm Steve Buss. Very honored to introduce our next guest, Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
You are one of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes, that's correct.
Here today, one of the originals.
One of the originals, correct.
Very pleased to have you here, sir. How did you become interested in aviation?
Well, during the 1930s, this was a popular thing among youths at that time,
sure,
to build model aircraft and aspire to be people like James Cagney and those people that were playing in Dawn Patrol and those movies, that silent movies that were coming along at the time. And then World War II came along, or the beginning of World War II, and a lot of us who were of age and had to register for the draft. And since the taking pilot training was a voluntary type of thing,
right,
I volunteered, took the examination, passed the examination, and went on to train as a cadet.
Had you had any pilot training before?
Never.
During the service?
Never gotten an airplane before. In fact, the first time I got an airplane was entirely different than what I thought it would be like, you know.
What did you think it was going to be like? And
well, we used to make these little, what they call push carts, mm-hmm, when we were youngsters, and we had the controls on the front, the pedals or the wheels on the front there.
Sure.
And to turn right, you would push the left pedal in, and to turn left, you would push the right pedal in. Well, it's just the opposite in the aircraft there. And that's what I did, trying to transfer that early
muscle memory there.
Muscle memory, yes.
Oh, my. So where did you train?
I trained down in Tuskegee,
you did.
Alabama.
Okay. And when did you join the service? When did you?
I went in March 20th, 1943.
So the Tuskegee Airmen training program had already been
started,
moving.
And that had started in 1941.
Right.
Yes.
Talk about your training, how you progressed from the primary trainers up to the T6.
That's right. I went in a group called the College Training Detachment at first, and we got 10 hours orientation in the Cub. Then we went over to the Air Base, and we started the regular curriculum of the Air Force there. I flew the PT-19, Fairchild PT-19, and then basic, the BT-13, and then finally, the last phase was advanced flying the AT-6. After that, after I graduated, I got 10 hours in the P-40 Warhawk, and then trained in Walterboro, South Carolina in fighter tactics, and flew the P-47 and went from over there to overseas to Italy and joined the 332nd or the Tuskegee Airmen that were there at the time, and flew long-range bomber escort missions. I got 43 missions in, and it was quite an experience.
And when you say long-range bomber escort, that says to me P-51 Mustang, right?
P-51 Mustang, that's okay. Right. And long-range as far as Berlin, so that was a 1,600-mile round trip.
Gosh, a long time.
Yeah, right. A long time to sit in one place.
Right.
You know, right.
And especially because the Mustang can go so much faster than the bombers.
Yes, that's right. So we had to weave over them to keep the same ground speed as they did. They were traveling at maybe 190 or 170 miles an hour, and we were doing 250, 70 or something like that. So we had to weave and make S-turns over them in order to maintain the same ground speed.
And you said 43 missions before the end of the war.
Yes.
Okay. And do any of those missions stand out as maybe more exciting or more memorable than others?
They were all pretty exciting.
Yeah.
The first missions I flew, I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea whatsoever what was going on, and that was exciting. And then, I remember, you know, the groups that we'd escort going out with, and they would put out these, they'd get at altitude, and they put out these contrails or vapor trails, and the four engines putting out these vapor trails, and you multiply that times the number of bombers that were flying out, and could be as much as 400 or 500 of them there. It was a sight that I don't know if we'll ever see any sight like that again. I think it was a one-time experience as far as the arrow was concerned.
Right. Let's hope it is a one-time experience for that kind of war effort. Right. You may have mentioned it, and I just blanked out on it, but where were you based with the Mustang?
Well, that was overseas,
in
Italy, and it was Ramitelli, Italy, and that was, you know, as you look at Italy and you look at the heel with the jettisoning out, we were stationed just around that area.
Okay. So after the war, you stayed in the service?
No, in 1950, I got out of the service, and I decided I wanted to go back to school, so I went to New York University College of Engineering and got my degree in mechanical engineering. And after I graduated from school there, I decided to go up the corporate route, and that's where I was ever since. Of course, there was a blank era in there where I wasn't flying, but when I was 82 years old near Detroit there, I had opportunity to start flying again.
Oh, good.
I started flying a motor glider, and that's a Schweitzer glider with a motor fashioned to the plane to take off with. And I flew that out here about 7 years ago the Oshkosh Festival.
Right? That would be a long flight.
That was 5.5 hours.
From the Detroit area?
From Detroit coming out here, yeah. 5.5 hours.
And so
traveling at 90 miles an hour.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So you are a flying octogenarian.
A flying octogenarian, that's right, exactly.
Not many, but there's more and more as our lifespan continues. Yeah. Flying octogenarian means that you're still an active pilot after the age of 80.
Right,
anyone
exactly.
Anyone who's wondering. So the motor glider, for those who don't know, you basically take off with the engine, get up to altitude, shut it off. And
that's what I used to enjoy in the summertime. I'd get up at altitude there, and, you know, if it was a good hot day with thermals out there, I'd shut the engine off and just glide around for about an hour or two, you know.
Yeah, what fun.
What fun.
Yes.
What fun.
I'd like to take you back to 1947 because you actually won the Top Gun trophy that year.
Well, to make the record straight there, I was on the winning team.
The winning team.
And there were three of us on the winning team. And the contest was broken up into two groups. One was the jet group and one was the piston group there. And it was the Continental Gunnery Meet, which the participants in the meet were from the continental United States.
Right.
None of the guys that were overseas. But anyway, the 332nd, which is better known as the Tuskegee Airmen, and the team of three, we won the competition for the piston aircraft there.
And then the trophy mysteriously disappeared.
The trophy mysteriously disappeared. I won't go into any speculation as to why it disappeared and that type of thing, but it was rediscovered again by a young lady, a historian, Zelly Orr. And she found it in a warehouse in Dayton, Ohio, at the air base out at Dayton, Ohio. And now the Tuskegee Airmen said, well, we want that trophy because it was some of our guys that won the trophy. And the Air Force says, no, 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 that's ours. So they put it in the museum that they have out in Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
And they're taking care of it very well.
Very good. And as I understand, your team was not really well-equipped compared to some of the other ones, but again, like the Tuskegee Airmen, you overcame the circumstances to
come
on top.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the most modern of aircraft we flew, but the planes we flew, it was good. You know, we flew the P-47N, which was the latest model of the P-47, and they only made 1,500 of them, and it was a unique aircraft because it was designed actually for what they thought would be a protracted war or flying from Okinawa to Japan.
Right.
So it had a 10-hour endurance on it there, and to make the pilot as comfortable as possible, they even had an automatic pilot.
Oh, in my goodness. I did not realize that on the P-47M.
Yes.
You are here this week. You're also helping to support the Red Tail Rise Above experience up at Kid Venture.
Yes.
Have you been able to spend a lot of time there so far?
Yes, I have. And, you know, a wonderful group, you know. This is the closest I've been to the group. I've heard of them before. I've read about them a lot and met some of their members. But this time I've met a lot of their members there, and it's been an enjoyable experience.
And you've been helping the children go through the
children
and adults go
over
through
at the adventure there.
Through the trailer and see the movie and everything. How does it feel knowing that your story from World War II continues to inspire today?
Well, I'm a little amazed because when it happened, when I was actually going through it, I never thought that it'll be a historical reference later on. And I'm just surprised, and it's made me very happy.
Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart, one of the original Red Tail Tuskegee Airmen. Sir, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to visit with us this morning. And if folks want to see you, you will be up with the Red Tail Rise Above exhibit throughout the week.
Right. Okay. Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, good
meeting. Have a great rest of your air venture. Right. You're listening to EAA Radio.